Hi everyone, it's episode possibly 65 of the Noise Cancelling Podcast. I'm castigated every week for not knowing what the episode number is. Done it again. This week we're going to be talking all about the world of fitness. So I went out and I found some super fit people to come and help do such a thing, and they are
Sherielle Smith, editor-in-chief, Laptop Mag.
I'm Stephanie Woods, I am the editor of fitandwell.com.
I'm Michael Saw. I am a freelance writer for a variety of publications.
And I'm Gareth Beavis, global editor-in-chief of Tech Radar. Quick question, Cherie. Does the word fit in terms of attractive translate to America?
I mean, yes, there it like, but I'm glad to say that we are getting more body positivity over in the States, and I hope that extends worldwide.
That's worse than that. It's like, I don't mean in terms of like, if you are in shape, you are attractive. I meant more as in the fact that over in England, that person is fit means that person is good looking. It's not necessarily around sort of physical wellness. It's more just around
always dead fit him.
Well, I just answered your question as no then.
Yeah. Good. Okay, we've got that one out of the way. We've covered the intergalactic divide, which is great. We'll go straight in for the big question. As we always talk about lots of tech things, this week it's hard to avoid Google I.O. I say it's hard to avoid. I had to sit there and watch the whole of the presentation yesterday. There was a shitload of stuff that was interesting in theory, but doesn't matter.
So many things that went over my head. It's like, oh,
yes,
I'm with you. Gone. Okay, I'm with you. It was wild.
Google's making a big deal about an error-free quantum computer, and I understand quantum computing. I'm vaguely aware of what it is, but straight away, it was a very, very long time of listening to the word qubits over and over again. And the way that Google tried to solve this was to get Michael Penner to come along and be like the everyman, listening to an engineer talking about quantum computing and asking really interesting and relevant questions. And it was awful, because it's one of those things where you can see that, you know, this man's been an actor for a long time and is quite gifted comedically, but wasn't allowed to extend himself and really take the mickey and take the piss of what was actually being said, because it was clearly Google was like talking about the importance of qubits and, you know, we've got one of the coldest places in the universe and all this kind of stuff. And it just fell so flat so often. So in honor of that, given that Google inexplicably got Michael Penner to be involved in an excruciating section around quantum computing, what's the worst combination of celebrity and product launch that you can think of? And I'm going to go with Mike because he's nodding first.
So this is a good one, because I think there's been quite a lot, and I was kind of racking my brain about what was the worst, but I think there's one that stands out above everything, and I was there to witness it live, and that was the Michael Bay.
Oh God,
good one,
Samsung,
good one.
Which was, I mean, I don't think anyone knew what was going on. I just remember, you know, being, you know, in Vegas and CES, and you know, you have to cram to get into those conferences, and when everyone's in, and then he comes out on stage, and I don't think anyone has an idea what's going on, and then all I just remember is him just running off, basically. And for me, that tops the worst I've seen, I think. And I saw it live, which was great to have to experience, I think, in the flesh.
That was such a good one for Samsung, though, because I remember speaking to some people who were involved afterwards, and they're like, it was absolute car crash. He just sort of decided he couldn't do it anymore halfway through. No one knew what he was actually there to do in the first place, really. We're talking about Transformers or something in a Samsung TV. And the amount of coverage it got compared to like what would have been normally, it was just incredible. It was massive. And Cherie, you love Vegas, so therefore you must have been doubly winning on that.
That was a bad one. This one, like, I didn't, this one just sprang into my head when I thought bad celebrity endorsements. So back in, I get when BlackBerry was still a thing, it was so long ago. BlackBerry decided to hire Alicia Keys as the brand ambassador. And so, you know, you're seeing all the, like, Alicia Keys, BlackBerry, they're getting all the proper juice that they're supposed to be getting off of this team up. And then Alicia decides to tweet something.
Yeah.
It's saying something positive about BlackBerry. And it says, sent from iPhone.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yeah. It was like, oh, I cackled.
Oh, dear.
So I think that is one of the worst And just for one of the weirdest, Will I Am in any tech product.
I second that.
Steph, what about you?
Yeah, so mine is a bit more on a fitness theme rather than tech, although that's a loose connection. So as a lifelong fan of the sport of netball, I've played since I was 7. I recently qualified as a coach. I was really excited when I saw Kim Kardashian wearing a netball bib in an ad for Uber Eats in Australia. She was starring alongside the character Sharon from Kath and Kim, who, for anyone that watches the show will know, is a big netball nut. And I thought, this is brilliant. This is really netball's time to, she's going to take netball global, especially in like America, where it's not as widely played a sport as it is in places like the UK and Australia. So it's really exciting until, in an interview, she revealed that she didn't actually know what netball was, and she didn't really know what she was involved with, which just shows that obviously if there's money attached, then they'll sign on the dotted line. So she was asked in an interview, do you actually know what netball is? And she was like, no, but in America we have this thing called the Met Ball. I don't know if it's anything like that, which is, for anyone that doesn't know, is a big fashion event. People get very dressed up, there's a theme, very glamorous. It's kind of, in many ways, the opposite of what netball is. So yeah, that was quite crushing. But for any American listeners, I would encourage you to check out netball. It's an excellent sport. Sherry's probably thinking, what is she talking about?
It's basically basketball, but you're not allowed to move very much.
I take issue with that description of it. It's so much more than basketball, but not being able to move with
it's
ball.
So much more tactical.
Yes.
All right, I'll take your word for it.
Please do. There are lots of clubs in America. I follow a lot of them on Instagram.
How does it compare to roller derby in America, do you reckon?
Roller derby?
Yeah, I realised the chance of you knowing exact numbers.
It's completely different in terms of one's on four wheels and one's on no wheels.
No, I mean in terms of, you know, the kind of the status is like a cool sport to follow. I haven't thought about roller derby for about 4 years, so who knows?
I don't know if it has the kind of the cool association, but I will say this, once you pick up that netball and get on a court, then you will be obsessed. It's very, very addictive.
Yes, Steph, okay.
There are mixed teams in London, Gareth. I can take you for a game if you want.
I do love playing centre. It is true.
Is that right? I can see you as a centre, lots of energy. But surely with your height, you need to be in goal.
No, I'm really shit at everything to do with being good at being tall. I'm awful at basketball, genuinely awful. I'm like, just run around a bit. That's all I've got to offer.
Can you go in defence? You just stick your hands up. It's all good.
Yeah, again, I'm not fast enough. I've been through this. This is why I'm trying to skip past netball, because I really enjoyed it during school. We played it a bit mixed, but it didn't stick. For me, I don't know if it's the worst one, but it's the tie-up that upsets me the most still was HTC. When HTC was good many, many years ago, in terms of being like the real dominant force compared to the iPhone and stuff, they were doing the HTC One M8 and One M9, blah, blah, blah. And one of the big criticisms was they weren't spending enough money on marketing. So they're like, right, let's spend $1 billion or something, I think it was, or something ridiculous, on Robert Downey Jr. To front some adverts and be our new creative director and stuff. And I think, I'm not entirely sure, but I think they didn't finish all the adverts because they just couldn't make it work. There's one like, what does HTC stand for? Hipster Troll Car Wash, and did some sort of weird shoulder shimmies, and it's just what a waste of money. You know, there was a cool one with Gary Oldman just sort of like looking out the window at the rain. That was fine. I was like, good, you're on the right track. But yeah, just things that HTC could stand for, a rabbit with mermaid legs, just yeah, no, just what a waste of money when that was the kind of thing that was the one thing the brand needed to really make itself a force in the smartphone world. It just never happened. I'm just more sad than annoyed about that one.
It's very Austin Powers the way you presented it. $1 billion.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Evil vibes going on.
It's because I just looked it up and someone said that, and I thought that's what I remembered as well. But then I thought about the number and thought that seems a bit too large to offer someone to do an advertising campaign. So I'm pretty sure that was wrong. So, and Mike, what do you mean? You were in the sphere at that point, covering the same kind of stuff.
Yeah, I just remember thinking it almost must have been a conversation where it was, oh, we need to get, just spend some money on some talent, got the talent, and we're like, well, we don't actually know what to do with them. And that's how it came across, basically. And I remember the ridiculous amount of monies that were spoken about in terms of how much they paid Downey Jr. apparently that he got. It's a shame because I loved HTC back in those days, but I think they kind of were losing a hold of things really at that at that at that point, which is a shame. And kind of not really around as much as I'd like them to be now. But yeah, I remember that well, and just not really getting what the concept was, apart from spending a lot of money.
Yeah, and they gave him like complete control about everything that he could do in terms of, yeah, it just didn't make a lot of sense at all. No. It was $1 billion. Holy crap.
$1 billion.
Yeah. Anyway, I think, yeah, I mean, anyone who has ever seen the Michael Bay confusion at Samsung, that is absolutely the winner. So well done, Mike. Thank you for bringing that back to our lives. Let's go straight into the Gadget Hall of Fame. For listeners who don't know what this is, it's a very large aircraft hangar that exists in my mind where there's lots of walls to put things on and a skip in the corner where Matt Swider, our US Editor-in-Chief's headphones, are placed because he tried to bring them into the Gadget Hall of Fame. And I don't like them. But we got more opportunities now. So Mike and Steph, either your first gadget or your favourite gadget, we want to hear about it and we will judge whether it deserves a place in the Hall of Fame. 9 times out of 10, it gets in because the passion will sell it. But, you know, there could be some stinkers. Mike, you go first. What are you bringing?
I mean, I have tested a lot of things. And obviously, I wanted to keep it on theme. Obviously, I mainly cover wearables and have done for years. And I wanted to think about something that really stood out. It wasn't necessarily brilliant in the end, but at the time, I think it was a huge thing for wearable technology and fitness trackers. So I'm going to go with the Jawbone Up 24, which was, I think, still now one of the best kind of designed or best looking fitness trackers. You know, it didn't have a screen. It wasn't kind of a conventional tracker at the time. And anyone that kind of said, I think for me, anyone that kind of said at the time that wearable didn't need to look good, for me, it had to. Otherwise, I didn't really like or enjoy wearing it. And I think this, it just looked nice. It didn't look like a piece of tech for me.
Was that the one that joined over on itself?
Yeah, so it kind of like coiled over, which I think was probably a problem why they had so many hardware issues with it. But I just think, yeah, I liked wearing it. I think it looked nice. And then also all the software stuff that Jawbone were doing around that time, I think it was a lot nicer than what Fitbit was doing. I think it was a bit more insightful. I felt more willing to go in and use it and look at that data. And for me, that's one that when I still think about the wearables that are coming out now, it's one I still think about in terms of matching that kind of software and hardware, apart from when obviously it continually broke all the time and wasn't waterproof, which was a big deal for me. I think for me that's the one that kind of I still really think about a lot in terms of kind of the wearable industry. And you know, I think Jawbone are not in this space anymore, which I think it's sad. Obviously they're kind of pivoting to the kind of health space now, but I think at the time they were really giving Fitbit a run for their money. And obviously that, you know, there was talk that Fitbit wanted to buy Jawbone as well at the time. So I think that was at the point of Jawbone where I think they were doing really good things, but ultimately they were let down by the hardware. It would break all the time. I mean, I got through so many of them, ultimately, and I wasn't the only one obviously that had that. So yeah, I think for me the Up 24 is one that I want to put in that aircraft, probably a little small space in the corner.
I feel like this, I want to make this a head-to-head. One's going to go in the skip and one's going to go in the hangar.
You're so mean.
Stop it.
So, Steph, can you beat it?
I'll give it my best shot. So, on a completely different note, I would like to pitch to you my vibrating foam roller. And I saw Sherry looking up there, wondering where she's going with this one.
Well, Steph,
given
the fact that I recommended this to you, you know, I think this is a pretty easy one.
You did, yeah. And I thank you for that recommendation. So I have, the product you recommended to me was the Hyper Ice Viper.
What a great name.
Yeah. It's a great name. I feel like I'm winning this. Sorry, Mike. But you've got other options are available. Jax Jocks Connect is a really good product and actually won an award at the Fit and Well Awards recently. And the reason that I'm pitching this one is because when it comes to fitness, I think that the recovery portion is something that so often gets forgotten.
Yep.
And we do so much of it instinctively. Like we do a big workout, we refuel to replace the energy that we lost. We take on water,
biscuits,
to replace the hydration that we've lost. But we don't often think about how our muscles need to recover and rest. And foam rolling can play a really key part in that. And obviously, a bog standard, you know, $20 foam roller will do the job nicely. But the issue that I have with foam rolling is that it takes effort. Like, you can't just sit there and it'll happen to you. You have to physically do it. And also, it's not the most enjoyable, pleasurable of experiences.
No.
And what I find with the vibrating foam roller is that it just takes some of the work out of it and does the work for you. So you can just kind of ease into a little pressure point that might be hurting and really get in there. So it just makes the whole process a lot easier. So that would be my product for the Hall of Fame.
You've done it in such a way that makes it sound so professional and proper, which it is, of course. But I just, like, I bought it because we got sent it to try, and it just, it's funny because it vibrates and it makes foam rolling just less boring. And afterwards you feel like someone's like washed your legs with lovely cold and cleansing water that makes everything feel better.
Can you take it on the top level 3 setting? Because I can only do that for 10 seconds or so. Oh, well, I generally stick to 1 and 2, but 3 is like proper pro.
I've never been below 3, Steph. I've always been at three.
And you'd be nothing less. You do have to be careful if you're using it, as I am in a flat when you have neighbours downstairs, because the vibrations through the floorboards are...
I made something fall off the kitchen.
That is real.
In another room with it in the lounge the other day. And I'll be honest, if you've got a 6-year-old around, they are enthralled by this vibrating thing that will just move around the floor by itself. So that's also a win.
That's what I like about it. I just like seeing it dance around on the floor, basically.
Well, this is the thing. In the hangar, it's going to be all over the place. You're going to have to put it in a cage or something.
I completely agree with what Mike said about the jawbone. It was a real trendsetter and everything. But the fact is, jawbones around the world are now in bins everywhere because they're just broken. And you're like, I might give this to someone, but no, it doesn't work. The band has snapped or it doesn't work. Yeah, so easily the high price. Sorry, Mike.
Damn.
But you know, at least the jawbone lives next to some headphones, so that's fun. Right. Let's talk fitness tech. So I'm going to you first, Cherie. When you think about fitness tech, what do you think about? Like, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
At this moment, Peloton, the mirror, Tonal, smart barbells, fitness bands, things of that nature.
And what about kind of turn it around? What was the first thing that started the fitness tech wave in your mind, given you've been covering the area for so long and you've seen everything?
You know, I kind of remember that jawbone being the first thing that like set off the fitness band watch. But there, like, Microsoft had something too. It was this chintzy. Oh, it was so bad. And it had the Windows Phone. It had the Windows Phone interface on it, and the battery life was like 2 or 3 hours. It was horrific.
It was just a Microsoft fan, wasn't it?
Thank you, because I'm like, I it just flashed in my mind so clearly with the kit, like the Microsoft kin.
The problem with that band as well is I don't know how it passed quality control, because you couldn't even wear it comfortably.
So
on your wrist,
bad.
And I don't even know.
So for those that don't, likely everyone don't remember, it was basically a fitness band that had a really hard, it was really hard, hard plastic, had a flat top so that the screen could be flat. I was just really uncomfortable to wear. It offered, Microsoft then offered refunds. It died in 2019. You could apply for a refund on the hardware. It didn't work. So, that was awful. I'd forgotten about that. I think there's one in the cupboard somewhere that will never see the light of day.
Yeah, I feel like I have one around here somewhere, and
it's on the Furby.
Shut up, bitch. Shut up.
It's alive. Okay, Steph, what was the first piece of fitness tech that you ever tried? Do you remember?
I think the thing that stands out for me was probably Fitbit, and just in terms of the way that it changed that market. The idea about 10,000 steps, that's been around since I think the 60s, and there were various devices that try to monitor that ever since then, but it feels like Fitbit was the one that came along and just kind of really took that to market and said, like, you know, this is what you should be doing as minimum, and we're going to help you do that. I have since progressed to an Apple Watch, which I absolutely swear by, and Apple through and through, but for me it was kind of Fitbit that started that trend towards tech and fitness.
I mean, Mike, why do you think Fitbit took off so dramatically? Like I said, given there were so many others that are actually arguably better.
My first kind of encounter with kind of fitness tech and stuff was a Fitbit. So it was a Fitbit Ultra. I remember actually when I was working at T3 and in the same office as you, Gareth, and I remember getting called into a meeting saying, oh, we've got this this device, this pedometer that can do this. And, you know, I was very skeptical about it. And then I lived with it for a couple of weeks. And I just, apart from it falling off once, I just really enjoyed how easy it was to use. And I think that's why Fitbit has kind of stood the, you know, it's still here. And obviously why Google has kind of acquired it is because one is they've got the hardware, and I think they've done a really good job on the hardware in general, but it's the software and how easy it is to use. And I think when you look at Fitbit and maybe Apple as well, the way they make it easy for anyone to kind of pick up their devices and start using them. And I think that was the real appeal for me. And then they kind of grew the features and what they were capable of. But ultimately for me, it was how easy that the device was to use, and that's why I think it appealed so massively with people.
Yeah, I mean, it started off as just like a little tracker.
Yeah,
back in the day, just a little pedometer doing its thing, and then grew to what we've got today. I thought, yeah, it was the ease of use that made it so useful. It's like the fact that families could do when they brought in things like challenges, where you could challenge your mum to see who could do the most steps in a day, which actually kind of leveled the playing field. Even if you were younger and you were more agile and you could go running, it didn't necessarily give you that benefit when your mum's like, well, I'm just going to go to the shops 15 times and going to out-muscle you with my commitment to the game.
This is the thing. It's the simplicity and it's the accessibility. You know, obviously, if you want to do hardcore fitness, there are smartwatches out there for you and technology out there for you. But for a lot of people, they just want a gateway into fitness and a place that feels like they're actually taking some action, and Fitbit is an ideal starting point for that.
And I think at that point as well, I think outside of what Fitbit were doing, it was kind of, you know, had Garmin and Polar and those guys in that space were offering that kind of more serious tracking. And there wasn't really something in between. I think like pedometers in my head is kind of associated with kind of just going out and going for a walk. But I think they were trying to bring it to a bigger audience. And I think that's why it kind of lifted off, really, because there wasn't anything really around there that tried to offer a bit of everything. I think
people don't really realize at the moment what it is that's what fitness tech has actually done in terms of how it's only been around since about the 2000 and the sort of the late 2000s. I joined Tech Radar in 2008, and one of the first things I got was a Samsung Adidas tie-in mobile phone, like the My Coach, which had a little pedometer you put on your sneakers, and you had a chest strap. And like, this was like cutting edge stuff, you know, like you used to like guess how far a 5K was essentially, and then start time it on your digital watch and hope for the best. And this was like game changing, you know. It could tell where you were going. It gave you sort of like speed areas, and I was like, Mom, I did a 5K in 27 minutes, and I was so proud, and blah, blah, blah. And it was just this kind of, and you went and did it again and tried to get faster, and you could see where you were faster and slower. And yeah, and it's like, suddenly you had this data to tell you how you were able to do fitness. Oh, it was amazing. Oh, and it just led to a life now that I can't stop. Just can't stop. Just looking at every single bit of data about every single thing that I do forever and ever and ever and ever and ever now. And that's the genesis of that.
Yeah, and that has been the difference, the data that all these devices are able to give us. And it's a slippery slope, like, you know, to obsession. But also on the other hand of that, taking control of your fitness and feeling like you know that you have some level of control about it. And it's measurable, which is, when you're setting fitness goals, that's one of the key things, the first things that they tell you, things have to be measurable.
And you said you love the Apple Watch now. That doesn't do steps, like, overtly, does it? So...
How do you mean? It gives me some steps. I mean, it's around the 3,000 mark at the moment every day.
I mean, like, it's not that kind of, it's not the main thing that Apple's pushing you, like, do more steps. It's all like stand up more and
more ringy. So obviously the rings are their big thing. So your move, your stand, and what's the other one?
You're the Apple Watch user, come on.
Let me consult. exercise.
Just close those rings.
And
close
I'm
those rings.
Checking my watch and I'm now terribly behind on all of them, so I'm gonna have to go and do a workout after this. Thanks, Gareth.
And Cherie, what do you think of the Apple Watch in terms of like changing the fitness space?
I mean, Apple does what Apple does, and that's, I guess, innovate, because there were smart watches before that, there were fitness bands. I think Apple's ubiquity has helped push fitness into the main realm and make it mainstream and make it something that like isn't necessarily the people that are just in the gym 24/7 making sure that they're looking the best they can be and physically, like, it makes it more accessible, because, oh, well, my mom has an iPhone. Why not get her a Apple Watch to go along with the ecosystem and suck her ever deeper into Apple's clutches?
That's exactly what I did for my dad's 70th birthday. You've exposed me there, Sherry.
I personally don't do smartwatches anymore. Like, and I've never been a fan of the Apple Watch's design. It just takes me back to a better take on an old school Casio, and that gives me feelings of like, give me your lunch money, nerd. So I just
and you, as we talked about many times on the podcast, you love CES and Vegas.
I do.
I know this is going to be an off the top of the head thing and asking you to database your entire memories of that place, but what's the weirdest fitness tech you've ever seen there, or like health tech in general? Because they are always some crazy stuff, like really, really lovely beds to lie on when you had four days of no sleep just to try out some sleep tech for a bit are the real benefits.
Like, I've done virtual reality exercising. So you're on an exercise bike, you've got the headset on, and you're pedaling to stay afloat and hit and like you're trying to direct your way to targets and or fly your way through hoops. There was an electroshock one, like,
yeah.
that I did that. It was like they put these little diodes and it was supposed to like exercise your muscles without you doing the work. Just do the work. Just do the work. So those are the two that come to the top of my mind.
I once tried some smart socks that I couldn't use properly because I had to wait for them to charge for a bit, which was a real low moment in it. And they weren't just the socks themselves had all these like printed or like woven circuit boards in, so they could check where you're putting your pressure on and blah, blah, blah. But you had like these really weird kind of S&M gauntlet cuff things that went round your ankle that they contained all the Bluetooth stuff, like with like these really weird spikes all over them to connect to the actual sock itself. Genuinely
kinky.
It was a bit, except for the fact that on the first run, like, I noticed after about 10 minutes one had gone missing. I went back and found it. I was like, oh shit, like it just fallen off. And then by the next run it'd fallen off and I lost it forever. And I was thinking,
is that a Sensoria?
Yeah. That's the one. But and I've never sort of remember the sadness. Like, I had to go home. I was like, no, I really want to go for the run with these smart socks, but I had to wait 15 minutes for them to charge up before I could go running. I was like, this is a low moment in fitness. Just it was awful. But then you get to today, and we still haven't got to a useful point with it, but like there's far more stuff like that can be smart insoles that can tell you where you're putting your foot down when you're running, and we're a long way from people enjoying those. But in terms of tech that can actually make a difference, has anyone seen this week about Apple purportedly thinking about doing a blood glucose monitoring system somehow in the Apple Watch? There was a survey sent out that and it wasn't obviously the thinking about it part is there's a survey where Apple said, what do you think about blood sugar monitoring? The Apple Watch could do that really well. It does obviously ECG, it does blood oxygen levels. It's just like, it's such a holy grail to be able to like non-invasively, without having to shove something under your skin to like look at your blood all the time, tell you how much blood glucose there is.
I've been looking into this quite a bit, and I've been testing a lot of stuff around this. I've spoken to guys like Dexcom, who are obviously in this space a little bit, and obviously asking, you know, people who are making this tech already, how feasible it is to make this possible. And then all I kind of hear really is that it can't be as accurate without that kind of invasive element to it. That's what I keep on hearing. And I mean, obviously those companies are going to say that because obviously, you know, they still want you to use their stuff. But ultimately I think the science and the behind it, I think to me, it doesn't make sense that it can happen yet, just from the nature of how it has to work. And I think maybe it will be a bit of a kind of solution in terms of what we've seen with kind of blood pressure monitoring on the on Samsung stuff, where you're calibrating it and then it's kind of using kind of sensor technology to kind of give you that information, which is reliable enough, but you still have to go back and you know, calibrate it over, you know, a month ago, you know, after. So I think maybe it will happen, but I don't think it will happen I don't know if it can happen to the accuracy of the kind of the invasive method, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my concern as well. I guess the only plus side of it is that obviously diabetes is such a big issue, big health issue. And I guess that anything that's putting it on people's radar a bit more, to be aware of that as a health metric would be a good thing. But yeah, it, you know, the accuracy would be a concern of mine, and maybe it's just a gateway into, oh, I need to get this checked out further.
Yeah, I mean, and that's been a lot of what Apple's done, actually. If you look at what it's, you know, like the blood glucose, that's not the blood glucose, the blood oxygen monitoring, the echocardiogram to be able to, or the electrocardiogram to see what actually is happening with it. Everything is like, well, you should probably go to the doctor now because this is an issue. And I think that could be interesting for diabetes sufferers. But you know, my dad's bang into the diabetes tech because he's got diabetes, he loves tech, and he's constantly on at me to find out what could be done and whether anyone's actually getting closer and all this kind of stuff. He has a sensor under his skin that allows him to check all the time, and he loves that. You know, you can tap it with a smartphone and do all these kind of things.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, it is. They're so expensive as well to keep doing, but for like a quality of life, well, not quality of life, but something that just really helps you live day to day with a disease like diabetes, it's massive. I just feel like, let's get nanobots in there. I know Elon Musk's had a bit of a weird week, but I'm like, he's thinking about everything. Like, let's just chuck some robots in the bloodstream and they can do it for us.
Well, I think what's interesting as well, and what I've kind of learned is, I've used something called Super Sapiens, which is that kind of monitoring, but it's for...
Oh, yeah, I want to try that.
But it's for fitness. It's fitness related. So I think it's this understanding of who this technology is for. Actually, there's other use cases, and I think that's what's really interesting for me. So it's this idea that you can kind of better understand how you fuel your training. I think definitely think it's something for kind of endurance athletes and triathletes, things like that. So I use one of those. It's, you kind of wear it on your wrist, but you have to, you kind of sit there, you use it for kind of 14 days, and you can kind of tap it with your phone to kind of get that information. And I think it's that idea that it's, people might understand it as having a use case for a certain type of person, but I actually think it's quite wide in terms of the use case for the technology. So if it does become more widely available in tech, then I think it can only be a really good thing. And it's, I think the uses of it are quite wide.
Cherie, what would it take to get a smartwatch back on your wrist?
A more watch-like design. Not making me charge it every couple of days.
Any fitness stuff, like anything that it could tell you about your health that nothing can right now?
I mean, I guess I would do it for that, but like just to be walking around with it on my arm, looking like, I already wear outlandish looking headphones at any given time, but like I don't need to complete the look with a weird looking watch.
I feel like you do. I feel like this fits your persona as much as anything. You know, like, you're wearing cat ear headphones right now. Let's get a cattail watch just to balance it out.
I think a Microsoft band would go really nicely with those headphones.
I mean, so I think it's one of those things, when you're into it, it's so easy. Like I wear a Garmin quite a lot, and it's got capability of stress tracking all the time. And it's like, really, when you get proper nerdy with it, and you can tell when you're getting ill, that's when you're like, oh yeah, look at me and my data. And then turns out nobody wants to hear about your stories of like, well, actually my body battery did not recover adequately overnight, which shows me that I am struggling, you know, with my HRV stress levels, and endocrinically I'm not quite where I should be, and everyone walks away. But in terms of the...
Sorry, what?
Yeah, I know, it's weird, isn't it? I'm so lucky I'm not...
It's dropping up a bit there, Karen.
Yeah, exactly. So lucky I've got a partner. But in terms of the future, I mean, one of the things, like those smart socks I had that I hate, and you know, you wear these different t-shirts that can do heart rate monitors, like why have we still not got that thing where you can just, it'll give you like a full body understanding of what you need to do in terms of fitness? Like, you know, they're all the same standards, so your t-shirt or your smart socks or your trainers or your smartwatch are all capable of talking the same thing, giving this full picture of your body, because we pay so much money to personal trainers and tech can do it. It's just because they're all like, oh no, we want to do it this way, we want to do it this way. Nothing ever gets made cohesive and is actually useful. You just end up paying like $40 a month subscription for something that does one thing, and then $20 for another.
It's hard. I do think generally making this tech is really hard. And I think I can, you know, speak from the kind of the wearable point of view, where I think it's taken us a long time to get to this point where I actually think stuff is, I could, you know, recommend and I think you can rely on. Whereas I think you go back a few years and the hardware wasn't there, the software just wasn't there, it wasn't good enough. But I think the technology is getting to a point where I think the quality of devices and the software can be be good. But you're right. It's, you know, the fact that a lot of these things, I mean, that's the thing for me when I get something new and it's like, will it communicate with this device or will it communicate this app? And if it doesn't, it's like, well, if it doesn't do that, it's people are not going to want to use it. And you almost need to have that extra bit on top of the, what, you know, that hardware and that software and what you're doing there. And also it communicating with other devices. And the one thing for me that I, you know, I've been really passionate that it's not happened yet is smart clothing. And I really thought that was going to,
yeah,
I really thought that was going to explode. And when I started at Wearable, that was what the thing that I thought was really going to kind of power through. But the more I spoke to startups, the more I spoke to these companies, and you could just get that sense there, well, like, we can do this, but there's a hesitancy there, and it's actually really still really complex to do. It's really expensive to do. Actually getting it to be a, to fit everyone, like, you know, a lot of this stuff is really tight because you have to have the sensors, you know, so it's almost like alienating some people who can't use that, those garments straight away, and it needs to be for everyone. So I don't know if we're any closer to that. I don't get that sense. I just think it's really complex to deal when you're dealing with fibers, and then you also got the technology as well. So I think we have made progress, and I think we are in a good place. But those kind of those things that I thought that would take off and haven't, it still feels like we're quite far away from it.
What happened to that Project Jacquard from Google? I'm just looking at it right now. That was meant to be clothing, wasn't it? And now it's, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, they've got it in bags. They tried
Samsung, like, backpack, Adidas.
Yeah, which I've got. I thought that was a, you know, the stuff they did with Levi's, I thought was potentially that was something that could be a big deal for it. But it ultimately, I don't think it worked together well enough. It didn't do enough, I think, initially as well. And I think that's why they're trying to spread the tech into other devices, and it's this whole thing about making this tech invisible and being part of your life and just being effortless. And I don't think it's not really there yet. I don't think, you know, there's still some obstacles to try and get it where it needs to be.
One of the things I was thinking is, if someone said to me right now, you've got to wear, like, let's say quite a lightweight but still a wetsuit all day and all night, and it would give me all the kind of like super health tracking metrics. And it was, you know, and it was sanitary somehow as well. You know, there's a hole at the back. But, you know, so that you could, and it could just deliver everything. I don't think it would take much to make me wear it, like, 24/7. Like, just, you know, with your every kind of running dynamic metric, heart rate, like, what part of your muscles are weak and which ones need to be improved. And, like, when you walk down the street at this time of night, you do this. And, like, just all that kind of stuff that, you know, you'd love someone to tell you, but it couldn't happen. I feel like I'm maybe in quite a small subset of people that would take that. But I mean, how much would it take for you to wear something like that? Like, would it be like only if it saves your life, or a bit lower?
Like a full body suit?
yeah, a full body suit.
That's extreme.
That would be some Tony Stark level stuff. Like it would have to be like an arc reactor. Like I need it to live. Otherwise, this is an absolute no.
So unless he can fly, you're not interested.
It would have to look good, otherwise I'm not wearing it.
Yeah. That's what it's going to come down to, isn't it? Like, Gareth, I'm picturing you walking down the street in a wetsuit, and it's not an image that I want to think about.
Well, it could happen. You know, you could picture that actually happening. Gareth would do that.
Yes.
That was horrible. I don't know why I got turned on by that.
No, it's just, not you specifically, but just
you said me specifically. Very,
well,
very clearly.
You broached the example. Yeah. You brought the wetsuit into this, Gareth.
Yeah, just you specifically, Gareth. I really don't want to see you in any kind of wetsuit. Right, let's do Beeble Trends. It's the time for the week where we're trying a new game. We're trying to see if it could work. Let's find out. So Beeble Trends is very simple. We use Google Trends and we take it from a specific point in time. This week, the results were taken at 1 p.m. today. That's UK time. We take the biggest topics of the week. We work out how high they score in terms of popularity. 100 is super, super popular. 1 is not popular at all. And we compare and contrast and see which is higher or lower. This week, we've got 8 different stories. Number one, Google I.O. yesterday, when we were recording this. So that was Tuesday. Had loads of things announced, as we talked about. None of them particularly interesting, but some interesting stuff in there. How popular out of 100 do you think that was, Mike?
Out of 100, I'm going to go 46.
46. Any advance on that from anyone else?
That's a pretty good guess.
Here comes Cherie.
I'm gonna go 35.
No, 70. Massive. Oh. People are really interested in this. Google AO, there was loads of things announced. We talked about qubits, quantum computing.
Those people, I found the people on the chairs outside was quite weird.
They had some lovely face masks, and you know, how much you must get paid to be a Google clapper. Just like, yeah, this is brilliant. Yeah, thanks for telling us about Google's new commerce strategy. This is lovely. Thank you very much. I mean, there was some cool stuff. I mean, Samsung did team up with Google and technically Fitbit to, you know, make their smartwatches way, way better. That's pretty big, but there is no announcement about what that's going to mean. So that's what we need to see first. But Fitbit could have a much fancier smartwatch, which is what we've been expecting for a while. So fingers crossed that happens soon. Talking of tech launches, the German tech show IFA happens every year, but this year it's going to be cancelled due to global health uncertainties, unfortunately. So we don't get to go and drink beer and eat Wurst in Berlin again. Is that more popular or less popular than Google I.O.?
Less.
Yeah, it's easy. It's less. It's 23. 23 popularities. That's pretty easy to do. That's very much, it's a niche if you know it. If you don't know it, you're basically...
Is Harry's Bar trending?
that's such an in-joke for the tech world, it's untrue. It's more of a, if you want to go and get really, if you want to go get really tired and just go and stare at a fridge, you get a very similar experience as going to IFA. Netflix's Resident Evil series has got what we called an intense new trailer and release date. So is the term Resident Evil more popular or less popular than IFA 2021?
More.
This has got to be high, right?
Way high. It's 91.
Yeah. People are still loving the giant vampire lady.
What's not to love? Yeah.
What's her name? Lady Dimitri. Dimitris? Dimitriku? I don't know. I can't remember the name. Yeah, but that's going to be an interesting one. The next one is Tom Cruise. But this was the
Tom Cruise versus Resident Evil.
Well, no, the story was the Starfield game could feature Mission Impossible star Tom Cruise, but he's also been chatting recently about shouting outside of different things. Is Tom Cruise less popular than Resident Evil?
Yes.
Yes.
Much less. Only 15. I thought that'd be higher given he'd been doing different things this week. So he's done well. We've been on target for all four so far, but this is going to be a tricky one. Skype. I still can't understand how Skype didn't manage to destroy everything when, you know, the pandemic hit.
What's Skype?
Are you serious?
No, I'm joking.
Okay, good. Right, yeah. I don't know. Like, I thought you'd be so into netball that you wouldn't have been had a chance to think about it.
But no, I completely agree. Like, where did it go? What happened? Like, how did they not make that work?
How'd you lose your lead to Zoom when no one knew what Zoom was really? And then Zoom was like, well,
it was popping up across all sorts of pop culture. And... Yeah.
And it was rubbish at the start. They had to basically be like, oh shit, everyone's using us. We better, you know, make it so people can't just walk into any Zoom call they want. They just type in the right numbers and letters. But that they've taken over. But Skype's days apparently are numbered because Microsoft has launched Teams for Friends and Family, which is basically Microsoft launching, pushing everything into one separate space, blah, 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 boring. Is that more or less popular than Tom Cruise?
More.
Tom Cruise was 15, you said.
Tom Cruise is 15 this year.
More.
And Skype. Is Skype more or less?
It looks so good for it.
More. I'm going to say more. Slightly. Only
yeah,
slightly
higher.
More.
No, it's only 8.
Oh.
No.
Okay. Cherie, do you understand what Eurovision is? Eurovision.
Nah.
It's a global event. Of course you must.
It's not global because the word Euro's in there.
Well, it is because Australia are in it now and Israel.
But I am also very American, so no.
Isn't it the biggest TV event?
Basically, it's just a load of countries come up with a song and they all play them and sing them out and then different countries vote on their favourite. It's an odd thing. There's usually a good 33% of them are novelty songs where somebody gets dressed up and does a really odd rendition of nothing. And it's such a cultural thing in the UK, but it makes no sense when you explain it. And around the world, like I said, Australia's in it. It's a Eurovision. It's meant to be Song for Europe, but Australia's sitting in there for some reason. They wanted involvement. Anyway, so Eurovision 2021, we did a guide on how to watch it. Is this more popular or less popular than Skype?
I'm assuming more popular.
Oh, more popular.
More popular.
It is way more popular. It's 56.
Still quite low, I think.
56. Well, yeah, it's no Resident Evil. You know, essentially, it's twice as popular as IFA. There you go. Spotify and YouTube Music will bring much-needed offline tunes to Google's Wear Watches. This is important. We do need more of this. But YouTube Music, more popular or less popular than Eurovision 2021?
Less popular.
Less.
Absolutely nailed this. You've done all seven so far. All right, the last one. Deepfake. Deepfake dubs could help translate to film and TV without losing an actor's original performance. Now, this one is obviously, you know, being able to just fix anything in post much, much, much better, which is a bit weird in terms of being able to translate things and make, you know, so you don't have to have a weird performance of somebody else doing another language and subtitles and all these kind of things. Odd. Deepfakes are scary and they're really odd, and I don't like it for so many reasons. But is deepfake more popular or less popular than YouTube Music?
Or, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
As creepy as it is.
Sheree, what do you think?
It's tense.
Like, you know what? I'm going to go with more, because when people are searching for deepfakes nowadays, I don't think they're doing it for security reasons, unfortunately.
It's unfortunately less. You failed at the last hurdle. You didn't get the clean sweep. It's only 8. It's the least popular thing this week, along with Skype. There you go. But
so do we win anything? We don't win anything.
You win a jawbone. Up 24.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. But unfortunately, it's broken. And the app doesn't actually get supported anymore. So essentially, it's just a piece of plastic you can't use.
Looks good, though.
Oh, I mean, it does, Mike. It really does. Well, that's all we've got time for this week on Noise Cancelling. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Steph, have you had a good time?
I've had the best time. Thank you for inviting me.
If people wanted to find out more about your sterling work, how could they do that?
They could visit fitandwell.com, or they could follow We Are Fit and Well across Instagram, Twitter and Facebook.
Mike, how about you? First of all, good time out of 10.
Good time out of 10. 8.5?
Yep.
What did you mark down on?
It was higher until you started talking about you walking around in a full body suit.
That's what got the extra half point. Also, the listeners can't see, Mike's got an incredible wall of running numbers behind him. How many marathons have you done, Mike?
15? I think it's 15, wow. 16 now.
Oh my God. I can see one that I did with you, so I knew that there must be more than one, so that made me feel confident.
Many, many. So, but yeah, you can obviously find me at Mike Saw on Twitter, Instagram, and obviously I'm part of the Run Testers as well, which is a YouTube channel that I do with some other journalists that we test running stuff. So you can go and watch our videos there as well.
That's Mike Saw, SAWH, for anyone who wants to follow it effectively. And Sheree, how about you? Good time?
You know I always have a good time.
Will you be tuning into Eurovision this weekend, Sheree?
I guess I'm going to have to read the how to watch, because this is a new thing to me. I'm like, what?
I feel like you'd enjoy it.
If you do it, look up some of the drinking games, which you can drink with any kind of beverage.
Now see, now you have piqued my interest. But if I do watch this, and maybe I'll stream it, I'll post a little bit of it to Twitter or Instagram, both of which you can follow me at MissSmith11, that is M-I-S-S Smith, not one, not two, but three S's, 11. And of course, for all things laptops, tablets, VR headsets, headphones, and everything in between, come to Laptop Mag. Check out my staff. We're awesome. And as always, laptop then, laptop now, laptop forever!
Always love the reaction when people haven't heard that before. I've been Gareth Beavis. You can follow all of our stuff on Tech Radar. It's just Tech Radar across all the socials. It's very easy. We're lucky that no one stole it first. I'm Super Beav on Twitter, where I tweet very infrequently, and you can enjoy that. I have had a great time. Thanks for asking. I would wear a full body suit if it gave me superpowers, or even just more indication on how hard my heart is working. I don't care about that. Well, thank you, everybody. I've had a really good time talking to you. If you did like the podcast, please, please, please review it well on Apple, because it helps people find us. Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, do subscribe. It is lots of fun, we promise. And we'll speak to you all next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.